right. Welcome back to another episode of Firewall. Really excited about today's show because I read this amazing story in New York Magazine, like it was just like last week. And then here these guys are on the show, which means we're getting something right. So Chris Barrett and Jay Bulger, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Cool. So Jay, you how did you come across Chris? And like, I assume once you did and you convinced him to tell a story, it sort of was pretty a no-brainer that you'd want to do it, right?
Well, to be honest, from the beginning, I just assumed that he maybe wanted to remain a bit anonymous, but...
Well, more anonymous.
More anonymous. but, you know, ironically, I heard about him from one of Chris's... Look, take a step back. A friend of mine who works in the cannabis industry was saying, hey, you got to check this guy out. He's selling pizza and making content, and he could very well be the first cannabis brand in New York. And he was like, holy shit, this guy's making so much money. He's flying on private jets. And I thought that was pretty, you know, interesting. And I tried to get in touch with him for a while, and, you know, his I don't think he mans his own Instagram account, so my request kind of didn't get to him. And then we finally connected, and he called me, and he said, hey...
Hold on, don't breeze over that. The way we connected, Jay doesn't have Instagram, so a dog page... Content. That's the funniest part.
My dog Danny DeVito.
His dog. So I got
your dog had already had the Instagram.
My dog. Yeah. My ex girlfriend made an Instagram account for my dog Danny DeVito.
So I get a message from Danny DeVito, which is a dog, and he says, "Hey, I'm a writer for New York Magazine. Right. I want to do a story on you."
And you're like, what
and
the
so
fuck?
I was kind of like, "Yeah, like what?" And then we were trying to get it done, or like we made a date or something, but honestly I forgot about it. And I was the day we were supposed to meet, I was flying to Miami to bring pizza to this boxer, and he calls me and he says, "Are we good for 9 o'clock tonight?" And I said, "Oh my God, I can't do it." I said, "This is gonna sound like a lie right now, but I'm in an airport getting on a private jet to bring the heavyweight fighter Shannon Briggs pizza." And he tells me, "That's one of my best friends in life. And if I would have known, I would have came on the flight with you." And I said, "Yo, we have an extra seat." Like, he's like, "There's just not, let me see if I could get there in time." It was just not enough time for him to get there.
Yeah.
And that's how we started off. But I said, "Look, I'm going here." He said, "I'm going to call Shannon and tell him that, you know, I'm doing a story on you." And when I got there, Shannon, when I finally did meet Shannon, he put in the good word for Jay. And then once I made it back to New York.
Meanwhile, Shannon's like FaceTiming me from the parking lot. And he's like, "Yo," because Shannon and Chris weren't like extremely close. I guess they were acquaintances. And then so Shannon's like, "Wait, this guy, your friend, you know, what's his deal? Because there's a lot of cops here at the airport. Is he a hot guy or was it a hot boy?" And I was like, "I don't know him like that." He's like, "Oh, man, there's so many cops at this airport. I might need to leave."
Yo, so he's on the phone with Jack Derulo on the flight. Shannon's on the phone. We just land, and Jack is, like, talking to him. And he says, "All right, we just landed." And he's like, "Yeah, no one's here. It's this private airport. You guys are the only people on that flight, and you're the only plane here, but there's cops here. And like, I don't know if that has anything to do with you guys, but," and I was like, "In 2020, you think the cops are here for pizza? No way that's for us." But I told my girlfriend, "Look, film this just in case. Like, you know what I mean? Film it from the beginning to the end just in case. I don't know what we're about to walk into. I don't know if this has anything to do with us or not."
But they were there for you.
Hell yeah, they were there for me. Hell yeah.
And it was the pilot sold you out, huh?
So what happened was we take two. On that trip, we had 10 pizzas, five in each delivery bag. And those, we had them underneath the plane. But we have two empty boxes for pictures and for video, like, you know, to make content on the plane. And Jack, my partner on the plane, asked the pilot, as the pilot was walking to the bathroom mid-flight, if he could take a picture in the cockpit with the box. And the pilot looked at the box and he said, nah, I can't do it. I'll get in trouble, blah, blah, blah. And he just left it like that. He went to the bathroom, never said anything to us. Unbeknownst to us, when he came back from the bathroom, he called and he said, look, I think you better call Miami-Dade PD. I don't know what's in this plane, but I think it has something to do with cannabis. And he just
Did he ask you what the pizza was, or you can just tell from looking at the box that clearly it's THC oil on the pizza?
Well, my logo is like, it's called Stone Pizza, and it's just ST, and then instead of a O is the marijuana leaf. So he saw that marijuana leaf, you know? And I don't think he called and said, hey, there's marijuana pizza on this flight. I don't think he knew even to say that in his vocabulary, you know, like. I think he just said, look, I don't know. There's weed pictures on boxes, and I don't know what's inside of them. And
didn't he have to fly you back later that day?
No. I got locked up.
You land by the law. Oh, right. But they arrested you for nonviolent?
Yeah, for not giving my...
What does that mean?
For not giving my date of birth. So I could have gave him my date of birth, you know? And the people I was with wished I would have gave them my date of birth, you know? But, when I did realize that they were there for me, I said, you know what? Today we're going to learn. Like, today we're going to learn what, you got me. I'm him. And I got my pizzas with me. The first thing they asked me was, whose pizzas are these? And I said, they're mine. He's like, they're all yours? I said, yeah, they're all mine. Okay, now, you got me, you got the pizzas. I just got off a flight from another state here. I said, if nothing else, we're gonna learn today what they could and what they will do. Like, one thing I know for sure is they can't test these pizzas in the lobby of this private airport, you know?
And so when did you get out? Shannon bail you out?
No bail. You know, 17 hours later, honestly, I slept good for the whole time I slept. It was cold in there. Besides that, I slept the whole 17 hours. There was no bail. I guess the law is if you only have to give your date of birth and your name if they have no other way. Like, if they could obtain it in another way, you don't have to give it. And I told the judge on this screen in Florida, I said, Your Honor, I just had gotten off a plane. Like, it wasn't a commercial flight. There wasn't nobody else on the flight. They knew my name and my date of birth. They knew everything about me before I landed. You know, they were waiting there for me. And anyway, it was good content.
Yeah. Basically. Sorry. Yeah. So let's rewind a little bit.
Some people thought I directed that. Like, I put that together. Like, I don't know if Scorsese could direct that. Like, that is not, you can't direct that. You think they give me too much credit.
But it was like the end of a Scooby-Doo show. Like, when they were looking at the boxes, it's pretty funny. Where they're like, what is this? You know, they didn't even know what the fuck they were looking at.
Yeah.
So, Chris, I want to get into your whole life story because it's pretty remarkable. But just for the listeners who are trying to piece all this together, how'd you come up with the idea of weed pizza, and like, how did you go from concept to execution?
Yeah, so before I did this, I used to own a company called Send a Package. It had nothing to do with weed. We used to send packages to inmates in prison in New York State. And when I shut that down, I had always said in life that I wanted, if I wasn't doing that, I would be in the cannabis business. But I just didn't understand what I was saying. Like, I didn't understand in what capacity I wanted to be in the cannabis business. I just knew that this was going to be the next big market and I want to find some kind of niche. Never thinking pizza, never thinking food. I'm not an edible person. It wasn't my train of thought. So I thought the best thing to do was I needed some time away from New York, and I moved to Eureka, California. And I learned how to grow, and I started growing. In being up there, someone invited me to a dinner, like a cannabis-infused dinner, just at their house. Their wife cooked. It was kind of whack, really. But at that dinner, I said, you know, I couldn't go back to New York and do these cannabis-infused dinners at really nice places and invite celebrities, and I think I can make a go of this. After trying to grow for 6 months, I realized that the money is good, but there's no life. Like, you can't have a life, you know? And so I came
you
back
can't
to-
You can't, because you're a farmer.
Yeah,
that's
man,
really,
like, that's your
a
life.
Really hard job.
Yeah. And it's dangerous being a farmer there.
Up there, yeah. And coming from here, it's like, you might as well be in prison. Like, you know, you're stuck on a mountain and there's nothing going on. So I knew that that wasn't the angle. So I finished my grow and I did that and I came home and I started the dinners. Still no idea about pizza. My dinners were like steak, lobster, shrimp. They were high-end dinners.
Were you cooking it or did you hire them?
Nah, I hired the girl who wound up being my girlfriend in this story, but I hired her years ago before we were boyfriend and girlfriend to cook these high-end dinners. She was the chef at one of my at my best friend's nightclub, so that's how I knew her. And I said, hey, look, cannabis is the next thing. Would you want to do this with me? And she said yes. And in doing that, she stopped cooking at midnight, but my events went on till 4 a.m. So people were hungry around 2 a.m, like, you know, not for another steak or something, you know, but for something.
For a snack, yeah.
For something. And I was like, yo, tomorrow let's try pizza. And then we tried pizza and we tried pizza for a few times. And then when we would do our dinners, people would request the pizza. Like, they would be like, yo, is the pizza going to still be there? And I'd be like, yeah. And then I got to a point where I realized that I can grow the pizza. I can scale the pizza way faster and way larger and with more profit than I can the dinners. And I abruptly stopped the dinners and started the pizza.
And but you also learned from at least from what I read in the story that how to make pizza, right?
I pieced it together. You know, like I'm an Italian kid from Brooklyn. I know mad people whose families own pizzerias or they own pizzerias. And I kind of... Nobody said, here's my family recipe, but like somebody helped me with the crust and I liked their crust, so they gave me their crust, and somebody else, I liked their sauce and they gave me their sauce, and throughout time we kind of made it be our own, you know, a little bit better or add our flavor to it.
It sounds like, Jay, I think you tried it and you had Adam Platt try it. You know, what was your reaction?
Adam Platt's scene got cut from the story. It was my favorite part of the thing. I showed up to Washington Square Park to meet him.
It's because he gave me a 6.
No, he loved it. The story. No, he gave you 10 out of 10 on the weed pizza scale. But, I mean, you're talking about...
That's a fake scale. There's no scale. I own the scale.
Yeah, but as far as pizza goes, he's like he's a bit of a snob. As he said in the story that got cut, he said, I'm a card-carrying mother...
It's like saying Kamala Harris is the best female vice
six
president.
6 out of 10 on the... Platt scale is like, you know, you're talking about 10 is like a Michelin star. You know, he's reviews like, you know.
No, I know.
Anyway, it's good. Anyway,
I was just making a joke, man.
Yeah, yeah. So, this article was difficult to write because I hadn't written in a while.
You were high the whole time.
And I was so fucking high this entire time. And, I'm very competitive, so... I kept trying to keep up with him, so he's smoking a blunt. Meanwhile, the blunts are like this long, and I hadn't smoked blunts in a long time. And I'm like eating pizza and smoking blunts. And there were a couple of times where I was like, Chris, I don't know if I'm a writer. I don't know if I can write. It was fun. It was fun, but
It was like a four-month process.
It was
right?
A four-month process, but I was really, I took great pride in the fact that I was able to write a story while intoxicated the whole time. It made it a lot more fun to write, you know? And, you know, I'm not a normal.
That might be the secret. You might be onto something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I will say that you tend to smoke more indicas. Mm-hmm. And they make it more difficult for me to talk, like communicate. I'm more communicative when I smoke a sativa. So I was smoking a lot of indica with him, and I was just like, Chris, I think I gotta ask you a question. And like,
my I was concerned a little bit how it was gonna come out. Like, you know,
well, because I started
a terrible story.
I started reading my notes, and I was like, holy shit, what happened?
Like, yeah, he read me the story like, I don't know, like 4 days or maybe 5 days before the story came out. I was just floored. Like, I don't think I said anything. It might have took him 40 minutes. To read it to me, you know, over the phone. Yeah. I didn't have a thought to express out of my mouth other than I can't believe this is so good. Like I just didn't know it way exceeded my expectations. You know, this could have been an ex-boxing guy.
Right.
You know, high and it could have came out like course.
Not I've like, been punched in the head a lot.
Yeah,
I have.
Like, you know, I was so like beyond ecstatic at the final result. Like, I didn't have one change. Like, I didn't tell him anything. Oh, why did you do that? Or why did you say it? There was no. I didn't say anything.
Which was surprising because
it's so long. You know,
well, it's so long, and also I go into these things thinking, okay, I'm gonna make sure I don't screw anybody over or betray any trust because you let me in and. Yeah. My initial expectations of the article were like maybe spending a couple hours, you know. So to be able to spend longer, I'm really appreciative and humbled. But, you know, I don't know. It's your life. So, I was surprised how open you were.
When, on those days that we spent the whole days, like that you came early in the morning, but how many days like that did we spend?
We probably spent like 7 days together.
Yeah, I would say like a week, 5 days, 7 days.
Yeah.
You captured it. So what's the reaction been since the story hit, both in terms of impact on the business, and then have you like heard from law enforcement?
I haven't heard from law enforcement. Shout out to law enforcement. Business has been great. There's been a spike in like our followers on Instagram, but we haven't really seen a spike.
People don't read
in our sales.
People don't read.
Yeah, yeah.
People don't read.
Yeah,
you know. People don't read. I'm sure it'll catch. I think it'll make the rounds.
But everybody who has commented to me, they all have said the same thing. Like, wow, I can't believe how well it was written. And also, most people don't know that about. Like, most people that know me, even the people that know me for 20 years or more than 20 years, 25 years, they don't know that side of me. Like, people be texting me or DMing me like, yo, I never knew. And I would tell people like, well, when was I supposed to tell you this? How would I do this? Like, I told everybody for the last, I've been home 25 years now. I tell everybody I went to jail for a gun because it's the easiest thing to explain. Like, I'm going to explain that. It took him, he had to stay a week with me to be able to explain that. And then 25 years ago, we didn't have the internet. So it's not like I could explain and be like, yo, there's this guy, Greg Scarpa, and this is what happened. People would be like, yo, this kid's a fucking bullshitter.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's not like I could have told this story back then. So 30 years later, we have the internet and things are a little different and all these people are dead.
So let's go back to then because, yeah, I mean, your first career was in organized crime, kind of ending up.
And I hope that I made it clear with the story. I keep emphasizing to people is like, I genuinely think here's a guy who got out of prison when he was a kid and he's only done good ever since.
Yeah.
You know, I find what he is doing and has done extremely admirable.
Thank you.
I'm his biggest supporter of his business. And anyone who questions that is, you know, living in the past. Yeah. You know, he's a real trailblazer for pushing the conversation that, you know, has been way too long delayed. And hopefully, you know, pushing the envelope will have repercussions in the economy of New York and, you know, into the future. Because we need more pizza pushes in this town, given where we're at economically right now.
Not in this town, but you know what he's saying. Nah, I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding.
So, Chris, yeah, I mean, tell me how your kind of career started, because at a really young age, you were doing some pretty interesting.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a career early on, but what happened early on is I left home really early. I had, I don't know, I had like a, I don't know, let's just say a tough time, a tough childhood. I didn't get along with my mother's husband, and so I was raised by my grandparents. When I say I was raised by them, they didn't even try to control me. You know what I mean? Like, they couldn't. There was just no controlling me. I was a little kid, probably with ADD or some kind of attention deficit disorder or something, and I was a bad kid. And I was a kid from Brooklyn. I often say this, like, who was I supposed to meet? Like, I was a 15-year-old kid in Brooklyn. Like, who was I gonna meet? Like, Bill Clinton? I don't know. Like, maybe if I was born in D.C., maybe I would be a politician, you know? But I was born in Brooklyn in the 70s, and I grew up in the 80s, and I went to jail in the beginning, earlier than in early 90s. One of the things that... And what had happened is I met these guys, and up until that time in my life, these were the only people that were ever good to me. So I hadn't met a soul in my life in 15 years that was good to me. And I met these guys, and they were good to me, so life was good. I thought I had life figured out at 15 and 16 years old.
And in your mind, they were good to you even now because... they happen to be good guys, even if they were also part of the Colombo family.
Nah, these guys
were good to you because you were useful to them.
These guys were the pieces of the shittiest of the shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Is
they were manipulated me, and it was probably so easy for them. You know what I'm saying? But I'm trying to explain it from the 15-year-old mind, right? I just look at it as nobody. Like, these guys helped me and took me from my grandparents' house and put me in an apartment. They got me my first car. They gave me a job, and I was making real money, and they were intelligent, and I just looked up to them, and everything was good for the first, let's say, 2 years, 15 to 17. But then the war started. And now...
So tell the listeners about the war a little bit. How did it happen?
So the war, in the middle 80s, in like 1986, the commission case happened, and all the bosses of the five families went to prison, and for life or multiple lives. And the boss of the Colombo family, Carmine Persico, he left control to somebody named Vicarina from 86. And in 1992, he was supposed to turn over control of the family to Carmine Persico's son, Alley Boy, who was coming out of prison.
Yeah, and?
He convinced the other families that this is not what we do. We don't hand control over to our children. This is not what this is. And the other families backed Vic, and Vic decided, I'm not giving control up. I'm going to stay the boss. So the other people, so the family split in half. Half of them sided with Vicarina, which was me. And the other half sided with Carmine Persico. And those two factions fought each other for control of the Colombo family. The war started June 21st, 1991. I went to jail March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, 1992, and with the state. I got arrested with the feds, but they gave it over to the state. And then I got arrested with the feds.
Why'd they arrest you? You mentioned for a gun, but what's the whole story?
Yeah, so the Vicarina's underboss, his name was Patty Amato, and he was on the lam at the time. He was hiding from the authorities, and someone told him that he was hiding in my house. Now, he never was hiding in my house, but he was there often. He would come and go and meet often other people. So somebody probably did see him coming and going, but he never lived there. But they were able to get a search warrant for Patty Amato. When they broke down my door at 6 o'clock in the morning on March 17th, he wasn't there. And I was there, and I was found with like a bunch of guns and hit lists and ammunition and walkie-talkies and scanners and all these things that these people would use during the war. And And so when the FBI came in looking for Patty, he wasn't there, and they have this little kid with all this stuff. So they hand me over to NYPD, and they bring me to Rikers Island, and I fight a case there. I'm there for like about 9 months, and I finally win. I win the case because the search warrant was for Patty Amato, and they had no business looking under my mattress or in my drawers where they found all the stuff. And anyway, I was able to get the search warrant thrown out and win that case. So then shortly after that, then they arrested, the FBI came and arrested everybody, and I was part of that roundup too. So it's the same case, but there's no double jeopardy if the state takes you and then you win and then the feds take you. The feds can't, the state can't take you after the feds, but they could take you first.
And Got it. So you're in jail, but Jay mentioned in the article that because you had been connected to the Colombo family, people kind of left you alone while you were in jail?
Yeah, I don't know. I know. I heard him say that too. I don't know if it's because of that, right? I think maybe, but everybody in jail is somebody. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it was that. I think it was more that I looked like I was 12. And they knew that I looked like I was 12 and I was on this big case. You know, like, I don't think that people are like, oh, that, watch out for that kid. He's, you know, somebody, because everybody's somebody. I think it was more they liked me because who is this little kid that looks like he's 12? I looked far different than anybody else in the federal system. You know, like, far different. Like, the cops would be, would just want to talk to me, just be like, who are you? Like, other inmates or like other races of people would be like, what are you doing here? How old are you?
And so you get out, you're 24 years old. What do?
Scared to death. I'm so scared. They say the worst part of prison is the first year and the last year, right? Your first year, you don't know what to expect. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what your sentence is going to be. And then the last year is you're afraid because you don't know what you're going to do when you get home. So they are right. I was scared to death. I come home and two girls pick me up in the parking lot. This was March 23rd, 1998. And they go to hand me their cell phones to make a phone call. And I went in jail in March of 1992. You didn't have cell phones out here, you know, like that. You were a doctor or a lawyer. You were some kind of big shot if you had a cell phone in 1992. And so it didn't make no sense that these girls picked me up in a Toyota Corolla, but they both had cell phones. And they explained to me right there in the lot. I was like, whose phones are these? And like, they're ours. I'm like, you girls have cell phones and you drive a Toyota? Anyway, they explained to me that, yeah, people are just starting to get cell phones. And I knew right there, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to sell cell phones. That's a way to make money. And that's the future. But I had no idea, like, I'd never been on a computer before. You know, I had no idea how I would do it. Like, but I knew that my other option is none. What is my other option? I don't have no skills. I'm 24 years old. I have a felony. You know, it's not like I'm a plumber. I could be a plumber. I don't have no kind of skills. The skills that I acquired up until now, I need to forget them. You know, I should be forgetting them. So it was a very odd time to try to learn the computer, but I was glad to learn the internet. I was fortunate enough to learn the internet alongside everybody else in 1998. I met with all the cell phone companies, and I wound up going with Sprint PCS, and they gave me the best deal. And throughout my whole parole, my parole officer let me travel and just open these Sprint stores. And
how many did you end up opening?
16.
Wow. And then how did you go from that to coming up with a business idea for a care package for prisoners?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's even a lot of stuff in between that. But in learning, well, I had to learn business. I had to learn the computer and all that. And I remember I watched this thing on, like, I think his name was Tim Sales, and it was like some kind of network marketing scam that they had going on. But I saw this one visual that he did, and he said that in life, if you want to be successful, it was like they pushed a basketball through a garden hose, And it says, if you want to be successful in life, you have to stay in front of the garden hose. And it gave examples. And this one little 2-minute thing has stayed with me. And they gave examples of like Buster Brown. Remember Buster Brown back in the day?
Yeah.
And he said Buster Brown was in front of the basketball. You know why? Because they had to serve the boomers, the baby boomer generation. They knew these was the biggest babies, and they're gonna need shoes. And everybody who stayed in front of that basketball throughout time has been successful. And they kept giving examples after Buster Brown, after the kids didn't need that. What was the next thing? Cars. And then what was the next rush? They all bought houses. So if you stay in front of the basketball, what's in front of the basketball now? Like healthcare. You know, all these people are older and healthcare. And so I always try to stay in front of the basketball, whether it was the cell phones, whether it was to send a package, whether it's the cannabis pizza or anything I did in my life, I try to stay ahead of the basketball.
So the basketball now is moving towards legalization of cannabis here in New York.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on how that impacts the business and how do you stay out in front of it?
I don't think anybody's really too sure. I don't want to make like I'm too sure. I really don't know, and I really don't have so much faith in Cuomo to do the right thing. I think it's going to get done this year. I just don't know if it's going to get done in the way that weed people think is the right way. You know, like today or yesterday, I heard something that he said, like, he's not going to let us grow our own pot.
So we got to buy plant. It from California?
We can't even grow one plant in our house for ourselves.
Really?
How is that the way to end the drug war? Like, I don't, like, it's like they talk out of both ends of their mouth, you know? Like, you want to end the drug war? You don't want to end the drug? Like, what do you
think? Yeah. I mean, I think especially with a guy like Cuomo, whose, you know, mindset was really formed kind of in the 90s where, you know,
yeah,
weed was
no, yeah,
drug.
Yeah,
he thinks of weed as a drug.
He gets politically that it needs to be for it. He really needs the money for his budget. But still doesn't like.
I honestly can't wait to give them the money. Like, you know, I long for the day that I could write a check to these people and be like, here, man, you know, I long for the day that I could bank. You know how hard it is for me to bank? I can't even bank personally. None of the banks take me anymore. Throughout time, systematically, they all just shut me down. They don't give me no explanation. I don't need an explanation. I understand why you shut me down. You Google it, and, you know, cannabis is federally illegal, and so
it's hard in California too. Yeah,
like, no, but try to be a 47 year old person and not have a bank account. Like, it's hard to function as an adult.
Well, how do you run the business then? Just pay everyone cash?
No, don't answer that.
There we go.
It's an issue.
You've made a couple of really successful movies so far. Are you going to do one about this?
Well, luckily, Chris and I, from the get-go, we talked about, you know, using this article as a launching pad to creating
whatever it is,
an adaptation. And I've been taking phone calls since the article came out. Sure. It's interesting. I've heard ideas from around the spectrum, from animated series to workplace comedy to scripted movie to 10-part thriller where you add, like, fictionalized. So I've just been taking all the meetings, and then, you know, I'll tell Chris and we'll sit down and decide what's the best thing. The people from Community call me on Friday. I never seen their show, but they were like, yeah, the whole thing is set in a pizza place. And, you know, then they were like, let's think about it. Anyway, I just started talking to people, and I got my people in LA who are putting it out there and getting it, exposing it to the right entities, and hopefully we can take it and create like some type of adaptation. But it's big. It's almost too big for a movie, and like so many generations of Chris's life, and, you know,
a series would be nice.
Yeah, a series would be nice. So,
absolutely.
And you know, coming from the guy who lived it, I swear to God, every step, I've always said it. I'm like, yo, this is like a movie.
Yeah.
This is like a movie. Like, every time things would happen, it would happen like cinematically. Like, it would feel like a movie. And it would be so odd. I had no idea I would ever do this. Like, you know, like, but it,
the San Antonio.
Like, I had no idea that it would all, you know, when I'm 47 or 48 years old, that it would all come together. But all along the way, I'd be like, just another chapter of the book, or just another thing of the movie.
Regardless,
like,
what I think is objectively true is that it's the most contemporary, hippest contemporary workplace you could possibly think of. I mean, it's like a Italian guy from Brooklyn mixed with hip hop people
and models.
Selling with models selling, you know, cannabis and pizza. I mean, it kind of checks all the boxes.
Life is good.
Yeah, I could think of. I mean, it's quite a idyllic, minimally idyllic environment to eat dinner. It's cool. You know, I have had a great
time.
Really,
what are we doing? You know, at the end of the day,
people happy.
Yeah, what are we really doing?
No, yeah, of course.
This is like,
So, Chris, if example, you want to say this on the air, if people want to learn more and try the pizza, how do they find out more?
You could go to our website at thepizzapusher.com, or you could check us out on Instagram at pizzapusher.
And Jay, how do if people want to just read more of your work in general? And I do after.
You can go to jaybolger.com. I've got a bunch of stuff up there, and my movies are links to the movies are up there. Or I have two movies on Netflix, so you can check it out there. I haven't been the best self promoter. I have like a couple hundred followers on Twitter that will attest.
All right, hopefully this podcast.
Or you can hit up my dog, Danny DeVito.
Right, Danny DeVito.
Bam. Danny Boy DeVito on Instagram.
Point. Hell yeah.
He's big time. He named after Danny DeVito himself, christened him. They're friends, better friends than I am with Danny DeVito. And speaking of which, I got to get Danny DeVito loves cannabis. I got to send this to him.
Yeah. Said so three of you guys have a pizza together.
Everybody loves cannabis.
Hey guys, this Jay, congrats on the story. Chris, congrats on an amazing story.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks for coming on.
All right, gracias. Bye.